I'm not going to be talking about any little brown beetles, but I will be talking about a little brown fly. The Hessian fly is a pest of wheat and found in almost all wheat-growing regions, and it can cause serious damage to wheat fields. When the Hessian fly attacks, it lays the eggs on the upper leaf surface, and then when the eggs emerge into the first instar, the larvae crawl down to the root tissue where they feed and spend the rest of their life, shown with the red arrow, until they emerge as adults. This can cause stunting or dark greening of the plant and sometimes death on a serious infestation, and it has 2 to 3 generations per year, depending on how far north or south it is. Due to this secretive lifestyle within the leaf sheath, one of the best means of control of this insect is through the use of resistant cultivars. Although due to the gene-for-gene interaction between the fly and the plant, the fly may possess virulent genes which can overcome the wheat resistance. And you can see here some of that. On the left, you can see resistant and healthy wheat, while you see susceptible and Hessian fly damaged wheat on the right. A little history about the Hessian fly. It's hypothesized to originate in southern Caucasia or southwest Asia, which is also the presumed origin of the genus Triticum. It has been historically theorized that there's been a single introduction into North America, and that it came over in the straw bedding of the Hessian mercenaries who served under Lord Howe during the Revolutionary War. And 3 years after Lord Howe came over with his mercenaries in 1779, the first Hessian fly infestation was reported in Long Island, New York. Although we don't necessarily know if it came from these Hessians or not, just due to, at the time, Hessian was a derogatory term more than anything because of the mercenaries. Although Hessian fly is a prolific pest, there are many pressures on it, such as the possibility of a single founding population and pressures from wheat resistance genes, like I've previously mentioned, as well as biological limitations, such as a limited dispersal, short lifespan, and rapid mating and overposition. All these factors seem to be able to reduce gene flow and heterozygosity, although new virulence genes continue to emerge. So that brings us to our hypothesis. What's going on in these populations of Hessian fly? Are these Hessian fly populations isolated? So we wanted to observe gene flow and identify any population structure, if any exists. This would ultimately help in aiding to identify how this pest is so prolific in spite of the increasing pressures against it, and also eventually help plan a more effective management strategy. So to do this, I used 14 microsatellite loci to look at variation within populations and population structure, if any existed, using these 10 collections of Hessian fly. Their locations indicated with the red dot, and they are labeled with the first 2 letters of the county and the state abbreviation. Now, the sample size ranged from 18 individuals up to 48 individuals, although most were between 41 and 48 individuals, with the exception of Maryland population having 18 individuals and this Alabama population having 25 individuals. To look at the levels of variation within populations, we calculated the average gene diversity over all loci for each population, which is equivalent to the expected heterozygosity given the allele frequencies. And this will indicate the population's level of diversity and perhaps levels of inbreeding. And it's also been suggested that a low level of genetic diversity has some fitness costs associated with it, as well as a lack of ability to adapt to changes in its environment. To identify population subdivision, we use a software program to assign individuals into a particular number of clusters indicated by K. And when I talk about genetic structure, I mean genetic differentiation across geography. And the two programs that I used for these calculations were Arlequin and Structure, respectively. For our average gene diversity, we had a range of gene diversity from 0.49 to 0.71, with an average of 0.61. And just looking at our 14 loci that we used, you can see there's quite a high number of alleles for each locus, and really a relatively high level of genetic diversity. So perhaps such a high genetic diversity has enabled this fly to survive over evolutionary time. looking at population substructure, what we did is we used all individuals from all populations and we assigned it to a number of clusters. For example, a cluster value of 2, we assigned it into two clusters, and that will represent 2 colors, which I'll show you in a minute. 3, you get 3 clusters or 3 colors, and so on and so forth. So here are the results for our structure analysis. Although this looks really confusing, it's really simple, so I'll walk you through it. Just hang on a second. Each vertical line on each of these 5 separate bar plots represents an individual, and each color, the multiple colors, represents the proportion of ancestral mixing for each individual, and the individuals are clustered into population, at which are labeled with the same 2 letters of the county and state abbreviation along the top, while the K value is listed along the right of the bar plot. So some really simple things I want you to see here is when we set the cluster value to 2, right away we saw that the Mississippi population became immediately differentiated from the other populations. When we moved on to a cluster of 3, we kept that same. Mississippi continued to stay different from the others, and then we started to get some sort of grouping between Louisiana and Texas, and South Carolina started to look a little funny. Then moving on up to K clusters, Mississippi continues to stay distinct. We still get some grouping between Louisiana and Texas, some similarities there, and then South Carolina becomes different. Whoops. Next, moving on to 5 clusters, some of the same stories, except we start to get a little bit more different with the fact that Georgia, Alabama, North, and then these 2 North Carolina populations begin to look a little more similar. And then moving on into the clusters, each population begins to be on its own. So what does that mean in this? Well, it suggests that this Mississippi population may have some sort of genetic barrier around it. So there may be something there preventing gene flow. It also suggests that there may be something around this Louisiana and Texas area that maintains gene flow just within that area, as well as South Carolina. And while you're looking at this, you can note that the thickness of the bar indicates how strong this barrier might be. And then you get this regional association between the North Carolina populations and then Alabama and Georgia. And then everything else starts to break up on its own. And I've presented this before, and I got an interesting comment, one that said, "Oh, this kind of looks like turf grass zones." And I was like, "Oh, well, that's kind of interesting." So I followed up on that, and this is a turf grass zone map. And you can see that this may imply that there is some association with turf grass zones, and turf grasses do seem to be a alternative host to Hessian fly. So there may be some validation there, although this is speculative, and there does need to be more research going on. And from this, I also got another comment, "Well, maybe look at topographical information." And there seems to be a similar association, although I don't believe that there's enough samples to really kind of look at this more in depth. So in conclusion, what does this all mean? Well, there's really relatively high level of gene diversity, and there does seem to be some regional gene flow. And this implies that the Hessian fly could have the abilities to adapt to changes in its environment, such as wheat resistance genes, as well as there may need to be coordinated efforts to have an effective control of this insect. I'd like to thank all these people at Purdue University and the Department of Entomology and at the USDA ARS there, as well as my fellow cohorts and, of course, my wife and daughter who sacrificed a lot for me. And at that time, I'd like to take any questions. Yes, sir. The question was if there was a single introduction of the fly into the United States, and if maybe the variation depended on multiple introductions, if that's correct. There is hypothesized a single introduction, like I mentioned, Lord Howe and his mercenaries bringing the fly over. And historically, it's always believed that that was the introduction of Hessian fly into the United States. And I would think that would result in a bottleneck and the opposite effect of what we saw, which was a high-level genetic diversity. I would think that if it was a single introduction, we would get a lower genetic diversity. So really, there's some things that we're doing, some other studies that we're working on, that points that there might actually be multiple introductions, which would be contrary to what it's always been historically thought to be. Thank you.
Our final speaker of the session is Michelle Trautwine. The title of her talk is Multi-Gene Phylogenetics of the Dipteran Superfamily Aceloidea.
I'm studying the phylogenetics of the superfamily Aceloidea, and this study is a part of Flytree, the NSF Tree of Life grant for Diptera. So the trees I'm going to show you are just a small piece of the much larger evolutionary tree of all flies. The lower bacustrine superfamily Aceloidea includes many large showy flies that we're all familiar with, bee flies, robber flies, Midas flies, and stiletto flies. There are other Aceloid flies, though, that are less visible and less well known. One family in particular is the Hilaromorphidae. Included in the Hilaromorphidae are two enigmatic genera, Hilaromorpha and Epistemia. These flies have morphological similarities with both Aceloid flies and higher flies. So the Aceloid region of flies has been notoriously difficult to resolve with both morphological and molecular data. And these two genera have been a pretty big contributing factor to that problem. But the placement of the Aceloidae in the tree of fly evolution is one of the things that makes it such an interesting group. This is a generalized fly tree. The Nematoceros flies are at the base, and here are the Brachycera that include about 100,000 species, and 80% of those species are in the group the Araminura. And the Araminura is one of the most strongly supported of all Dipteran clades with both morphological and molecular synapomorphies. And the Aceloidea is considered the sister group to the Araminura. However, Aceloid monophyly is not well established, so it's unclear if the Araminura and the Aceloidea share a recent common ancestor, or if a lineage within the Aceloid flies gave rise to the successful Araminuran radiation. So my objectives can be summed up with this one question. Who is the sister group to the Araminura? Is it a monophyletic Aceloidea? Or a particular Aceloid lineage, such as the Bombyliidae or the Hilaromorphidae? And the resolution of the phylogeny of the Aceloid flies should provide this answer. So initially, I sampled a total of 50 taxa representing all 9 families of Aceloidea, higher flies and basal brachycerans as outgroups. I collected approximately 4,000 base pairs of CAD and about 1,000 base pairs of 28S. Base composition heterogeneity was detected in the third positions of CAD, so they were subsequently deleted for analysis. I performed a parsimony, likelihood, and Bayesian analysis that included all taxa. And I'm not going to focus on the details of these trees because they really just represent a starting point for my results. What I found important about these trees was that they all generally have low support values and conflicting topologies. So, yeah, lucky me, right? Parsimony finds a monophyletic Aceloidea as a sister group to the Araminura. Maximum likelihood places the Microbombyliids as a sister group to the Araminura. And a Bayesian analysis can't discern between a monophyletic Aceloidea or the Hilaromorpha as a sister group to the Araminura. So through observation, it was clear that my results were very affected by taxon sampling and outgroup selection. So I sought to quantify the instability of each taxon in my parsimony analyses by, in order to identify unstable or rogue taxa that may be adversely affecting my topologies. It's been shown that the removal of these rogue taxa can increase resolution and support values in phylogenies. So I used RADCON, to calculate leaf stability values, and the most unstable taxa, shown here, I included Halaeromorpha and the Microbombyliids, and I eliminated them from my data set and repeated the analyses, a parsimony likelihood and Bayesian analysis. And happily, with these unstable taxa eliminated, the three methods of analysis converged this time on a single congruent topology, and the support values increased. You can see here the contrast between the resolution of the parsimony bootstrap consensus tree, including all taxa and stable taxa. So my support values increased, but there's still no support for the backbone of the tree, which would reveal the sister group to the Araminura. So now removing all unstable taxa also removes most of the phylogenetically interesting taxa, and some of the key players in determining the sister group to the Araminura. So I kept the stable topology as a baseline standard and adjusted my taxon sampling with the goal of including important taxa while maintaining stability and a congruent topology from all methods of analysis. I settled upon a taxa set here called reduced, repeated the analyses, and again, parsimony, Bayesian, and likelihood analysis converged on a single congruent topology. And I consider this our best estimate of acyloid relationships. So in this tree, the acyloidia is not monophyletic. The bombyliids are separate from the rest of the acyloid flies, and the rest of the acyloid flies do form a monophyletic group and are the sister group to the Araminura. However, there's no support for this relationship between the Araminura, the bombyliidae, and the remaining acyloid flies. The monophyletic clade of acyloid flies is made up of two groups, a therivoid clade and an acylid clade that includes mitids and apiocerids. And the family Halaeromorphidae is broken up, as it is in all of our trees. The enigmatic genus Epistemia is sister group to the Cyclorapha. And Halaeromorpha is a real troublemaker that's placed in a different part of the tree in each method of analysis. Here it is in parsimony, likelihood, and Bayesian analysis. So it remains the most unstable taxon in the group. So these unsupported results don't give us a convincing, robust answer. Halaeromorpha, the bombyliids, and the rest of acyloidia are all still competitive candidates for the sister groups to the Araminura. So to test the support for these competing hypotheses, I did a four-cluster likelihood mapping analysis with a programmed tree puzzle. So this is a quartet puzzling method, and I divided my taxa into four groups, the bombyliidae, Halaeromorpha alone, the remaining acyloids, and the Araminura. This analysis shows support, albeit slight, for our previous finding, the acyloids excluding the bombyliidae as the sister group to the Araminura. So this analysis also allows us to visualize the strength of the phylogenetic signal in our data set. And this image shows that over 12% of quartets fall into this no man's land where all three topologies are equally likely. So this tells us that there's a great deal of noise or non-phylogenetic signal in our data set. So to remedy this problem, we did what is often cited as the best means to increase resolution and node support. We added more characters. We put together a new data set with almost two times as many characters and just a few representative taxa. For eight taxa, we added additional 28S, the mitochondrial protein coding gene CO1, and the nuclear protein coding gene TPI, for a total of over 8,000 base pairs. The parsimony analysis, with the third positions removed, resulted in one tree, shown here. It shows a monophyletic acyloidia that includes the bombyliids as a sister group to the Araminura. Epistemia as an Araminuran fly, sister to the Cyclorapha, and Halaeromorpha at the base of the tree. And again, there's no support for the sister group to the Araminura. So my conclusions are that the relationship between the bombyliids, the remaining acyloid flies, and the Araminura is resistant to highly supported robust resolution using standard phylogenetic methods. And at this point, we're left with the conclusion that this relationship is an ancient rapid radiation. So my reasons for thinking so are that independent data sets, both morphological and molecular, have been unable to resolve this relationship with high support. Sorry, my fonts got messed up here. So often when topologies are unresolved or unsupported, it's due to an insufficient amount of data or an inappropriate gene choice for the question being asked. However, the same amount of sequence data and genes were used for have been sufficient for highly supported resolution in other fly groups, including the closely related superfamily Empidoidea. So we don't think this is a data problem. And likelihood mapping showed that our data includes a large amount of signal that doesn't point to a tree-like topology, but more of a star-shaped topology, which would be expected in a rapid radiation. So we're unsure of the sister group to the Araminura, but if we are convinced by the frequency of a finding alone and not by robust support, then the acyloid flies, at the exclusion of the bombyliids, would emerge as a sister group to the Araminura. We do have some other strongly supported results regarding the relationships amongst acyloid flies, though. Excluding the bombyliidae, the acyloid flies form two monophyletic sister clades, a therivoid clade and an acylid clade. The family Hilaromorphidae doesn't hold up to our analyses. Epistemia and Hilaromorpha are never found together, and the genus Epistemia is not so enigmatic anymore. It's the sister group to the Cyclorapha. And Hilaromorpha is unstable. So in the future, we're planning on examining our divergence time analysis, which we've already done but haven't really dug into yet. And additionally, we are going to look to results from the large-scale tree of life analysis for flies to see who emerges as the sister group to the majority of the higher flies, the Araminura. Thank you. If there are any questions.